This is Research Spotlight at Cumbria.
Research is really important because we need to underpin what we do and how we react to these challenges with evidence.
In this podcast series, we're profiling our researchers, hearing in detail about their work and the impact this has on wider society.
It's absolutely fine to have favourite species. So birds are mine. I have a tattoo of an Arctic tern, which has always been my favourite species. Zoology is a great place to go. If you're interested in animals in the broadest sense, come and learn and think about which path you'd like to take that down. I am Dr. Rich Frankson, Senior Lecturer in Science and Programme Lead for Zoology.
Well, first of all, welcome to the University of Cumbria. I know you're quite a new arrival, just a year this week, is it?
Yeah, a year to the day, I think. I arrived here. I worked at Newcastle University for 5 years prior to that.
What was the appeal of coming to... It feels like an interview now, doesn't it? When you want to apply for this job in the first place, what was the appeal of coming to the University of Cumbria?
Sure, yeah. So I used to teach ecology and biodiversity modules over in Newcastle University, and I was looking to have a bit more of input into the teaching I delivered, chance to kind of design my own material a bit more across a whole programme, think about creating a coherent programme in zoology. So that was when this opportunity came up at Cumbria. I jumped at it.
And take us right back then, zoology, why did you get interested, or how did you become interested in this area in particular?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a cliche, but I suppose it's the David Attenborough effect for me, really. It was... always been interested in wildlife and conservation. Birds has always been my thing as a lad. So I was into bird watching. Zoology is a really interesting discipline because it's quite an umbrella discipline. It covers lots of aspects of animal science, conservation, husbandry, management, behaviour, all those sorts of things. So that means that a zoology program really gives you the opportunity to kind of cover all of those things and allow students to take it where they find those aspects most interesting.
And I think as a topic as well, I think we've either become more aware of it thanks to people like David Attenborough and country farm and things like that. But I think in society as well, certainly in the news, you know, there's far more, I think anyway, more coverage. There's a story today about a bird that was endangered as well that hadn't been before in the UK. I don't think that would have appeared perhaps as highly as in the news agenda as it did as it would have perhaps 5-10 years ago. Have you recognised that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think lots of the wildlife programmes and there's greater coverage of it, greater awareness of it. I think people are more and more interested in animals in all different respects. Yeah, zoology kind of captures that, really. And there's not many kids, I don't think, that aren't interested in animals from an early age in some way. The story I think you were talking about there was the seabirds being added to added to the red list. Yeah, and I think there's a greater awareness of that in terms of human impacts on the planet is something people are more and more aware of, and the impact we're having on animals. And yeah, I think zoology kind of captures that for lots of people, and it's a way into studying which aspects of animals people are interested in.
I think people though perhaps sometimes see it as being an issue that's too big. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole issue about the environment and green issues as well, that you know one person can't make a difference. When you're teaching, do you recognise that? Do people come and say to you, look, I've come to try and learn, but I'm not sure I can make a difference? And is your job to try and say, look, we can all make a difference?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely our job. One of the things we kind of want to do is to allow our graduates to leave with a sense of responsibility and a sense that they can make a difference in these spaces. And I think most of the students come in because they want to make a difference. They feel very keen and they care about these things. And then it's our job to talk about how they can make a difference and how, sure, as an individual, perhaps our impact is minimal, but a successful professional zoologist needs to recognise that they need to be able to work across disciplines with many other people, policymakers, social scientists, all sorts. And it takes that kind of multidisciplinary approach before the impact for the better happens. So that's our job, is to kind of give them the skills, but also recognise that they need to work across those boundaries to make an impact.
And have you always believed that, or is it something that you learnt yourself as you kind of grew up and got to grips with what this fascinating and very in-depth subject this is?
Yeah, it is something I've learnt later on. It's not something I think I kind of inherently knew. And so, for example, a lot of my research is very multidisciplinary, and it just doesn't work unless we engage with economists and policymakers and political scientists, all sorts. I think zoology is a crucial key part of some of those challenges that we're trying to meet, but it can't work on its own and in a silo. So as I mentioned before, I've always been really interested in birds, and for me, particularly birds of prey, were always the thing as a kid that I was really, really into. There's actually a term for this. People call it the spark bird. It's the bird that gives you that spark and ignites that kind of interest. I grew up in East Anglia. Seeing any birds of prey was quite a rare, special thing. And I remember travelling once to the Welsh borders in Herefordshire and being amazed at the numbers of red kites and buzzards that I'd seen. That's not a special thing to see anymore. Even in East Anglia, you can go and you will see them as you're driving down the motorway all the time. But the first time I saw that, these birds of prey can live alongside people, and there are some issues and management issues and things that need to be taken care of. But for me, the first time I saw red kites and buzzards in their kind of natural habitat and natural abundances, and realised that I'd grown up in the absence of that, that kind of really sparked me. Okay, this is something that it's amazing to see, but also their abundances follow the patterns of human impact on the countryside and the planet.
That's funny. You see, I saw the other day two buzzards where I live being mobbed by a couple of crows, you know. And yeah. Again, you think, a couple of years, I wouldn't have bothered about that, but I could hear their cries in the buzzards' cries. It's so distinctive that you look up until you see them, you know, because it's in your psyche, just like you say, because you recognise it's there. Yeah. And boy, we'd miss it if it wasn't there.
Exactly. Yeah, so. And I think that's it. There's a term that's often used called shifting baseline syndrome. What that means is that as biodiversity is declining, each successive human generation becomes a little bit more used to a lower level of biodiversity, so you don't realize what we're missing. You're not aware of what's not there, if you like. And it's only when you travel abroad or somewhere else, like I did, and you realize what we're missing and what we should have, that it kind of ignites this kind of interest and passion to try and bring some of these things back and change their fortunes.
Tell us where you travelled and where else did you go, apart from the Welsh borders, apart from that, where else did you go?
Yeah, so another only in the last five years, it was a research trip to Slovenia. We went there to meet up with some colleagues at the universities that we were collaborating with. But while we were there, we went on some a couple of wildlife watching days with local guides. So there was one day we drove through the forest and we saw a young bear. But just driving through the farmland on the way there, there were all these amazing birds of prey, red-footed falcons, shrikes, all these sorts of birds that once upon a time, some of them anyway, wouldn't have been that unusual to see in this country, but we've lost. Yeah, it just really kind of hits home what things could have been like. Edges of forests, as nightingales singing anywhere, and different warblers, again, would have been fairly commonplace not that long ago, really. My sort of, as when my grandparents were children, they would have been very common. We've lost them in a relatively short period of time. And so for me, that's kind of a lot of my drive come from, and that's certainly sparked my interest in zoology and ecology specifically. Actually, studying how animals interact with their environment is that's where my passion comes from.
Just tell us, and clearly it's interesting, and for students looking for a qualification, it's useful as well. But why is it important? Why does it matter that you get this mix between academia, people qualifying, becoming zoologists, following your footsteps, but also perhaps making a difference in life?
I think research plays a really key role in that, because human impact on the planet, we often think about that in a negative way, but humans can have a very positive way, and we can turn the tide on much of these things if the resources and will is there. But it needs to be underpinned with evidence, and it needs to be underpinned with spatially explicit and relevant evidence as well. And that kind of ties back into what I was talking about, working across disciplines for these solutions to work. Research is really important because we need to underpin what we do and how we react to these challenges with evidence, so that we're not wasting our time and our limited resources, unfortunately, on solving some of these issues. Learning something like zoology and being taught by people that are engaged actively in research today is crucial, and what you get here at the University of Cumbria. We have members of staff with very different research expertise, and our students get taught the basics and the theory, but they also get that insight into modern active research that we're involved in.
And that must make a difference, because I suppose it's all too easy, isn't it, to lecture and teach and go over the same old ground year in, year out. But the fact that you've got recent research evidence that you can bring in, but also imagine get the students as well to get involved. I know from previous experience here, the Back on Our Map initiative, you know, that was a tangible thing that students, and I've actually got jobs through as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so So you're right. It gives us the opportunity to talk to the students in our lectures and in our sessions in the research, but our students are getting actively involved in it all the time as well. So we've had students involved recently in ecological restoration work of local parkland, doing some of the monitoring. We have students resurrecting groups which are looking into amphibians and reptiles across Cumbria. Currently, I'm involved in a project which is looking at something called regenerative agriculture, which is a form of agriculture which is designed to be more sustainable and have better ecological outcomes. And the project I'm involved in is starting to collate some of the evidence that we have around that. And I've got a couple of students helping me with that, looking through the evidence, summarising it for me. That means that they're getting involved in the research. They'll hopefully get their names written on some outputs, but also it's bringing them into that kind of working environment already. They're all already practising being a professional zoologist, and it leads on to volunteering opportunities and insights into the industry. So it's valuable for them. It helps us out. It's working kind of at the forefront of, you know, modern zoology, really.
I just wondered, just random thought.
Yeah.
I know as a parent, you shouldn't have a favourite child, but as a zoologist, do you have a favourite species or a favourite animal at all? Or things you don't like? You mentioned reptiles. I'm not a massive fan of reptiles, but do you have to, if you're a zoologist, like everything equally?
No, you absolutely don't. I don't try and hide that in my lectures. We had a really interesting session last year where I challenged the students to take a charismatic, cuddly species. So the one we chose was the panda. And we said, should we be spending the amount of money we spend on panda conservation? On the one hand, there's this idea that pandas are a flagship species and they drag people in to care about the planet and the wildlife. And I get that. There's an alternative argument that perhaps we're spending too much money on single species and we should be thinking about the less charismatic, less cuddly things. We should be thinking about the invertebrates and the insects, you know, the things that disparagingly get called creepy crawlies and those sorts of things, which are arguably more important for much of the functioning of the planet and our ecosystems. So yeah, we talk about that and we face that head on, and it's absolutely fine to have favourite species. So birds are mine. I have a tattoo of an Arctic tern, which has always been my favourite species. Unfortunately, today, that species, as I say, today named on the red list of threatened species. But yeah, those are things that were the spark for me to get into zoology, and other students will have different sparks. I have students who are passionate about turtles, for example. Turtles seem to be a really popular group of animals for some of our students. Others are interested in the insects. Not so many in things, you know, things that you find in the depths of the sea and things like that, and strange creatures, but that's not to say they're not important still. So we talk about having favourites, but also that, you know, we have a duty to look after all life, however cuddly or otherwise it looks. One of the things I've done since starting here in Cumbria is think about issues that are more focused in Cumbria themselves. So I'm currently involved in early stages of some feasibility work of actually putting back some species that we've lost from some of their native range. So in the past, I've been looking at things like the impact of farming on biodiversity loss, and something that's called human-wildlife conflict, where we have conflict between multiple land users over different species. But something I'm started to look at now is the reintroduction of some species into Cumbria. So two projects, just to name, that I've been involved in is one that's looking into pine martins. Pine martins used to be very widespread across the British Isles and have been lost from much of their range. They're now just in some isolated pockets throughout Scotland and some in Wales. And we're looking at putting them back into suitable habitat in Cumbria to link up some of the Welsh and Scottish populations. And another project similarly, looking at reintroductions of white-tailed eagles, or sometimes called sea eagles. So some earlier work done by some people who used to work at Cumbria looked at whether we have suitable habitats and suitable prey resources for these eagles, and found that we do, in fact, have the space for them. And we're now moving into the second phase, which is looking at the social acceptability. So we're consulting land users and other stakeholders into how they would feel about this and how we might mitigate any impact that they might face. So that project is kind of continuing and moving into next steps, but it's really exciting thinking about how we might get some of these kind of awe-inspiring species back into the Cumbrian landscape. Students here at the University of Cumbria will be hearing about this and also have some opportunities to get involved in some of the field work and the research involved in it as well.
That's both absolutely fascinating. I mean, yeah, certainly one ticks a cute and cuddly box. I think that's probably going to get you quite an easy ride when it comes to press and media coverage. But eagles, I can sense, you know, farmers being concerned, you know, the effect on other raptors and other birds as well. You know, they all eat, all part of the chain. Yep. So I suppose this comes into what you said before about crossing different disciplines. Mm-hmm. It's the economy, it's outreach work, engagement, it's making sure people, tourists as well. Mm-hmm. It's going to, everything that Cumbria stands for affects Cumbria would be affected by those two projects. So yeah. I suppose it's not just zoology, is it? It's things like economy, legality. Is it legal to do it as well, I suppose? Yep. Which again, I can't imagine many universities offering that kind of real-world experience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's, zoology is a crucial part of it, but it's just one part of it. You're absolutely right. So I've worked on other projects involved with birds of prey, and it can be really emotive, actually. One of the things I learned, actually my PhD study was on birds of prey in hunting estates. And one of the things I realized was that the kind of the ecological insight, which I was involved in, is crucial, but it's just one small part of that. Of that whole picture. And ultimately, you know, these are political issues, and we need that kind of political involvement, and as you said, economists, experts in tourism, social scientists, the stakeholders themselves are obviously crucial. And the projects that we're involved in, so BOOM, I think you mentioned BOOM, the Back on Our Map project, kind of really, really took that on board from the word go, that it needed all of these disciplines for these projects to succeed. And that's what we're continuing to do now. So yes, we've got the zoological expertise, and that's part of it. But also other members of staff here at Cumbria are involved in the social feasibility side of things, the economics, and we work with partners across Cumbria as well that bring other areas of expertise. And that's absolutely crucial for the success of these projects, definitely. I think one of the things we talk about, and we do this in some of the lectures here, we talk about how to kind of bring people together and how to facilitate people being able to share how they really feel about something. Let's take, for example, a farmer or a gamekeeper, someone with a real stake in the land and how it's managed, you know, that it's their livelihood, it's their home, it's their children's home. And sometimes if they feel that they're not able to talk openly and honestly because of fear of kind of being criticized, or if their bosses are listening or something like that, then that can be huge barriers. In fact, they can be immovable barriers. And what you can end up having, what the result can actually be, that people become more polarized and retreat into their camps even further. So we talk about that a lot in some of our lectures. We have a module here called Professional Skills in Zoology, and we kind of talk about this. You know, to be a professional zoologist, you need to recognize these kind of sometimes competing issues and viewpoints and things. And if we just try and shout even louder, then you just get this retreating into different camps, and you need to facilitate ways of people being able to talk and work openly and honestly. So just to give you an example, this white-tailed eagle project, which I mentioned, which is now moving into the second phase, is doing exactly that. We're looking into social feasibility studies. So we have people, and it's not my area of expertise, but we have people who understand how to get people's views openly and honestly, and from that look at workable solutions that work across all different interests. So that could be in terms of mitigating any impact, avoiding some areas, thinking about compensatory schemes, managing impacts in other ways. And it's really complicated. I won't pretend it's not an easy thing, and it doesn't always work. It's not research for research's sake. It's, you know, it's trying to have a real world impact. And I think that's, you know, that all of us here are kind of want that impact. We want to see benefits above and beyond just outputs of research papers, you know. And it should do. Research shouldn't just sort of sit in silos behind paywalls on research. It needs to be out there and working for the challenges they're trying to face.
And I guess that's good advice, isn't it, to give students or prospective students, that if you do come and study zoology, it isn't just an ology. You know, it's something that will be useful and can and there's evidence that it has been used in Carlisle, in Cumbria, and the rest of the world.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, I've been talking a lot about ecology and biodiversity declines and those sorts of things, but that's not to say that, you know, if you still have an interest in animals and animal sciences, there's lots of impact that zoology can have in other spheres as well. So we've had students go on into careers focusing on animal welfare, animal husbandry around domestic animals and those sorts of things. So they're having different impact than perhaps I've been focusing on here with my particular interests, but zoology is a fantastic kind of catch-all of studying the science of animals and how we can use that to face lots of different challenges that animals may face. Yeah,
well, that's come across loud and clear. As you say, it ticks many boxes. So I guess your ideal student doesn't necessarily have to love animals, but to perhaps be curious about the world, ecology, economy, head as well, tact, diplomacy. I mean, there's no one attribute, is there? It's kind of a whole range of things that people perhaps need to come. Curiosity must be number one.
I think I'll just use your word back at you, actually, and say curiosity. That's the key one. Curiosity, inquisitiveness, a kind of a passion to want to make the world better. If that doesn't sound a little bit trite, if I rewind back to when I was selecting my degree, I did environmental science, and if anything, that's an even broader topic than zoology. And the reason I did that was because I knew I was interested in animals, but I was also at that time interested in many other aspects of kind of environmental management and those sorts of things. So I came with curiosity to learn more and to think about where I wanted to take it. But initially, I wasn't sure, if I'm honest. And I think if there's students out there that are in a similar boat, they're not sure what career they're going to go into yet, I'd say that's fine. As long as you've got a passion and a curiosity, zoology is a great place to go. If you're interested in animals in the broadest sense, come and learn and think about how you want to, which path you'd like to take that down. Once you're here and you've been exposed to some of the theory and the different expertise that you'll find here, come along and make your choice once you're here, and what really kind of sparks that extra passion in you, you can take it down that path.
It sounds like what you said, you're never quite sure, you weren't sure at the start, you know, so I suppose that, you know, it's quite an exciting thing to think about, because the paths are so varied, you know, there's no straightforward routes. Who knows what the world and the opportunities that might arise.
That's right, yeah. So it's not only what you might find the most interesting or where you want to work, but it might be the shifting political landscape or the shifting natural world, the new challenges that might arise in the coming years, and you might decide that that's what you feel most strongly about, and zoology will kind of give you some of the foundations for that, and then you can take it in the path you want.
Thank you very much. There is one last question here, which I'm sure you're dreading, because it's the one word question. The question here that we conclude our conversation, can you choose perhaps one word which describes the kind of person you are? You can't have curious, because we've already used that. So that would be too easy, I think. So can you think of another word that would summarise perhaps what you've done so far, or perhaps what you hope to do maybe in the future?
Yeah, okay. That's a shame. So I wrote the exact word I wrote down was curious. I also wrote down inquisitive. That's quite similar to curious, I suppose. But yeah, inquisitive and passionate, I think a drive to kind of want to use the knowledge you gain and the research that you're involved in to enact change. I think for me it's crucial that what we do has some real world impact. Sorry for the doom and gloom, but you know, since 1970s the figure now is that we've lost around 69% of animal populations in abundance. You know, it's a biodiversity crisis. So for me, we should be driven to kind of addressing that, halting it, if not reversing it, pretty quickly. So, yeah, passionate. I'll go for passionate, but also, yeah, inquisitive to learn how we do that and to learn from others how they've addressed it, what I can learn from other disciplines in addressing these issues.
That's Dr. Rich Frankson, Senior Lecturer in Science and Programme Lead for Zoology at the University of Cumbria. Thanks for downloading this edition of Research Spotlight at Cumbria. Be sure to subscribe and spread the word.